Now, left-leaning comedy had a solid run as the more popular form of political comedy on television and other platforms. But recent years have seen a rise in more conservative and or libertarian comedy content. The conservative-leaning talk show Gutfeld on Fox News has strong ratings on late-night TV, and The Joe Rogan Experience is one of the most popular podcasts in the U.S. Our next guest says left- and right-leaning comedy have significant influences on the political landscape, and people on either side of the aisle shouldn't ignore the opposite side's comedy, even if they don't find it funny. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you watch or listen to political comedy? Do you like comedy in your politics? Do you think that comedians have an impact on people's political views, maybe even on how they vote? What kind of stuff do you watch, listen to, you name it? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Nick Marks is an associate professor of film and media studies at Colorado State University. He's co-author of the new book, That's Not Funny, How the Right Makes Comedy Work for Them. He's also a Wisconsin native and graduate of UW-Madison. Nick, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
You talk in the book about a big divide, I think even an awareness of conservative comedy, and that's probably true among listeners. I know we have, we just did a segment on late night TV a couple weeks back. We have Greg Gutfeld fans out there, people who listen to or watch the things you talk about in your book. And then there are people who are oblivious, or maybe just see the name, don't know what it's all about. Can you talk about that divide even in knowing this exists?
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the major goals of the book is simply to make our fellow liberals aware that conservatives are doing comedy successfully. They're economically profitable. They get TV ratings, as you just mentioned, in the case of Gutfeld. And this comedy has the potential to recruit new members to conservative causes in much the same way that political satire functioned on the left through figures like Jon Stewart, Stephen Colbert, Samantha Bee, and others over the years.
Right.
The interesting thing we found was that a lot of our fellow liberals were simply oblivious or didn't know about this robust world of right-wing comedy that we describe in the book for a whole host of reasons.
Yeah, your book is, in effect, a tour of conservative political comedy for a liberal audience, I think, to understand it. I want to go back to a moment where I think a lot of the people you're talking to may have stopped paying attention, where you had The Daily Show and its various spinoffs and imitators, and there were conservative efforts on Fox News and elsewhere to replicate that, to create the conservative Daily Show, and they failed. And some of the people you talk to in the book, and you quote critics and others saying, aha, this means liberals can be funny in this political way and conservatives can't. But then what happened?
That's right. The example of Fox News's 2007 failed Daily Show, the half-hour news hour, is often cited by our fellow liberal media researchers and political communication scholars as evidence that, well, the right tried to make a Daily Show back in 2007, and it failed. And admittedly, it was quite bad if you go back and watch episodes. And it's still held up as evidence today that conservatives can't be funny, that they don't have the psychology, they don't have the taste in order to create comedy. We think that's being willfully blind to the multitude of not only different comedy forms that are out there today, but the platforms that deliver it across our social media feeds, across established TV channels like Fox News and others. So to simply go back 15 years and say, well, yeah, conservatives tried this and it wasn't very good, therefore they're still unable to do it, to me, simply rings false.
And let's talk about Greg Gutfeld now, a central figure in your book. Fox News went from, I think, a 3 a.m. show to a weekend late night show to every weekend night and doing quite well with it in the ratings. Where do you position him in the world of conservative leaning comedy on Fox News?
Yeah, so Gutfeld is very much one of the faces, if not the face, of late night on Fox News today. He gets his start doing a, frankly, experimental comedy show called Red Eye for years in the early to mid 2000s, where it was a pretty conventional sort of news talk show, but he'd often have on stand-up comedians, writers, people who were inclined to have a satiric, ironic take on the news. He moves into a Saturday slot in 2015, the Greg Gutfeld Show. this show begins to attract eyeballs, especially with the start of the Trump presidency and the sort of comedic modes of address that Trump brought into his presidential term. Such was Gutfeld's success that by 2021, Fox News moved him to a nightly show directly opposite The Daily Show to compete with that show. And it was routinely beating not only that liberal satire show on Comedy Central, but also the late night broadcast stalwarts of Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Fallon, and Jimmy Kimmel.
One key thing here is we have so many options of what to watch that a niche comedy show, if it can connect with the right audience, whether The Daily Show did with a more liberal, younger audience, or Gutfeld can at the end of the day on Fox News with a built-in conservative audience, that's something we might not have been able to do when you had three choices late at night. You had to have a big tent and bring in as many viewers as possible.
It's a great point. And part of the sort of story we tell in the book is one of a move from a broadcast era with three channels into a sort of, you know, divided up cable era towards the end of the 90s into the 2000s to today, where media platforms more or less serve us in hyper individualistic taste circles, right? And it is content producers like Fox News, like Joe Rogan, the platforms like Spotify. It's their mission to kind of find these very, very small accumulations of audiences and aggregate them in political affiliation, demographic similarities, so that the measure of success, maybe getting 500,000 people to watch your show, is radically smaller today than it was even 5-10 years ago. This is the sort of media industry environment that's allowed something as seemingly unthinkable as conservative comedy to not only rise up, but to flourish wholly unnoticed by so many folks on the left.
Talking to Nick Marks, co-author of the book, That's Not Funny, How the Right Makes Comedy Work for Them. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring out a caller now. Seth is with us in Sparta. Seth, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you guys?
Good. What did you want to bring up, Seth?
Hey, you know, so in regards to, you know, the left and the right and what's funny, what's not, and who can have a sense of humor and who can't have a sense of humor, you know, at the end of the day, we're all human and we're all Americans. And, you know, you got to look at, you know, both sides of the aisle, because, you know, you might be a conservative and you might find some liberal dudes who are super funny. And, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, we're all not going to get out of this alive, so you might as well enjoy it while you can.
Seth, thanks for the call. Now, Nick, I know you're hoping that people at least be aware of the political comedy happening on the other side of the aisle. Can you talk about the value of that?
Yeah, part of it is absolutely an acknowledgement of our shared humanity. So it is a basic human impulse to laugh. And importantly, laughter has really powerful affiliative bonds. It brings us closer together with other human beings. We so rarely are in the same room with other people that we don't know laughing at the same thing, right? You think of what you used to do going to the movies to see, a Jim Carrey or a Will Ferrell movie back in the day. You didn't know most of the people in that dark movie theater. Today, comedy is not as much of a sort of bonding mechanism across difference. Today, comedy is much more likely to bond you with somebody who's already inclined to think like you, to laugh at the same thing as you, and you're unlikely to encounter someone who's politically, you know, divergent from you and share in that bonding power of laughter like we once were 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Seth, thanks for that call. Now, Nick, I don't want to ignore what ends up being the dark side of the book here. You know, one end of a conservative comedy political spectrum might be somebody making fun of a Democratic president, Democratic politicians. Not too out of the ordinary, really. But there's an ecosystem here that goes from there to some, as you tapped into, some really dark places. Can you connect the dots for us a little?
That's right. So the other sort of major argument we make in the book is that the sort of mainstream faces many folks might be familiar with, Greg Gutfeld, Joe Rogan, are connected and intentionally connect with more sort of malevolent voices further and further right on the political spectrum. So while listening to an episode of the Joe Rogan Experience itself might not be a sort of political act or a right-wing act, Joe Rogan frequently has on libertarian comedians like the stand-up comedian Dave Smith, who then goes on somebody else's podcast or talk show, who's got some ideas about race science or about what we should do with folks at the border. These connections are made clear for listeners and users via social media algorithms, right? So the more that you click on, like, comment on, engage with one of these comedians, the likelier Facebook, Twitter, and others are to connect you to folks further and further down into the sort of dark layer of trolls. And frankly, folks like Gavin McInnes, the Proud Boys founder, is a prominent figure we talk about in the book. So it's not that the immediate act of watching Gutfeld, listening to Rogan, is itself a bad thing, but it can lead to much more bad faith and evil actors the more you engage with this world.
We're talking to media studies professor Nick Marks about his new book, That's Not Funny, How the Right Makes Comedy Work for Them. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you like political comedy that you agree with? Do you avoid political comedy that you don't agree with? Do you have a favorite figure, past or present, who treats politics, broadly defined, in a humorous way? Do you have a question for our guest about his book and his work? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Nick Marks, media studies professor at Colorado State University, co-author of the new book, That's Not Funny, How the Right Makes Comedy Work for Them. He's with us today to talk about the role comedy plays in politics, how the landscape has shifted in recent years, offering a tour of conservative comedy, especially for the unfamiliar. You could join in whether you are familiar with it or not. 800-642-1234. Where do you go for political humor? Or do you just not find politics funny? Call 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Beth is with us in Beaver Dam. Beth, hi.
Hi. For 25 years, I've enjoyed watching The View. So back in the day, I would record it on a VCR, and today I watch it on my phone. My favorite commentator is Joy Behar, who is a comedian, and Whoopi Goldberg, the moderator, is also a comedian. And they always have one conservative host, and they don't seem to last. It's kind of like a revolving door. And then if you read the comments or critics, the attitude for them is towards them is murderous, so critical in whatever that they say.
Interesting. Beth, thanks for the call. Nick, outside of your book a little bit, but your thoughts on The View and political comedy.
No, I think it's a great example that both Joy and Whoopi are stand-up comedians. That's where they made their name. And that show, when it's at its best, is funny, or it's having sort of satiric takes on the news of the day. I will say that the Meghan McCain chair that she filled for years is intentional, right? I don't know that that show is as sort of balanced as it makes itself out to be, but it makes for great television to have her sort of be the sort of face of disagreement to the majority sort of liberal panelists on that show.
Thanks for that call. Jim joins us now in Milwaukee. Jim, hi.
Hello. I think The View, I'm funny you brought that up. I think The View supplies more comedy just by their hypocrisy. I mean, the show has a certain sense of comedy and they do target conservatives. But most of the comedy comes afterwards when you hear the hypocrisy of what they say. And just with a little bit of analysis, it really makes the left look bad. And I do listen to public radio and I listen to some conservative talk shows. And I got to say, the comedy is really on the conservative side. There's just so much material out there. And I do not know why any of the late night shows are. They don't make any attempts at Biden. They don't make any attempts at, just the hypocrisy that goes on with their policies. That's what I see.
Jim, thanks for the call. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, it is. It's a valid point generally that many of our television liberal comedians have gone soft in recent years. The function of folks like Colbert, the folks on The View, and others has been less and less to make us laugh, especially in the Trump era, and more to be a sort of soothing presence to say, they're there, the orange man is bad, he'll be gone soon, and we'll get back to life as normal. Well, now that he's gone, those shows haven't necessarily gone back to being as funny and sort of transgressive as they were in a previous era. That's got a whole host of factors behind it. But the main one is, I think those shows just aren't in the business of making us laugh anymore. They're too sort of broadly general entertainment based. And I think there's something to that caller's point that this mantle of edgy, sort of experimental, sometimes comedy is very much being taken up by folks on the right, where folks on the left have been vacating that space.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Steven joins us now in Milwaukee. Steven, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
What did you want to bring up, Steven?
I want to bring the fact that, you know, I'm a liberal, and I'm also a comedian. I've been a comedian in the comedy in the past, and I feel like it's a catch-22 where it's like, yeah, okay, you know, you can, you know, Joe Rogan and all this kind of stuff, yeah, which I do, annoys me and so like that, but it's also like, Jon Stewart also insulted people too. They insult people and they have on people and they're both spectrums. It's like, we're all human beings. Comedy should just be comedy. And I think that when you, and I do think the left side gets too butt hurt about like their comedy, because it's like, oh my God, you said this and they said that, and they get so offended so quickly. When comedy is comedy, and I do agree with what the talker was saying about, like, yes, to lead things on the path, but, I mean, we are adults here, right? I mean, you can choose to think, like, I watch everything, and I, you know, laugh at everything.
I gotcha, Steven. Nick, what do you think?
Yeah, there is, yes, comedy is comedy, but part of our analysis in the book is pointing out how there's very little money to be made by comedians from just sort of trying to please all sides, from trying to do this very broad general audience based joking. Instead, the thing that algorithms push to the top of our feed, the thing that advertisers want to pay for, is stuff further and further in either direction. Extremity, right? Polarity is what sort of drives not only our political discourse, but what drives profitable cultural products like podcasts and late night talk shows too.
Thanks a lot for that call. I want to get into one particular part of your book, Nick, in the darker part of a conservative humor, I guess, conservative comedy. Some of the trolling that goes on, with literally to the extreme of people making jokes about the Holocaust, and then when people respond, well, that's the joke. I managed to make you respond to this horrific thing I said. Can you talk about that trolling edge here?
Yeah, strangely enough, this is the form of right-wing humor that many liberals are perhaps familiar with, because it's such a familiar part of sort of online discourse and online culture. What you see on the right in figures like Gavin McInnes and Nick Fuentes and some of the well, out and out Nazi podcasts that we researched for the book is, again, an economic incentive to go where other comedians would not go. So folks see that, you know, Tim Allen is occupying this sitcom dad version of conservative comedy, and Joe Rogan is the libertarian sort of mouthpiece of the right wing. Well, some of the other further right trolling voices we identify say, hey, what if we went a step beyond all of those folks? All we have to do is garner an audience that's a fraction of theirs, and we can stay profitable and hope to take the next step up the next rung of the ladder to try to get more and more exposure.
And finally, Nick, one thing that kind of bugs me about a lot of political comedy, left or right, is that, okay, I have a show. I know my audience agrees with my perspective, whether it's a left or right show. I make a joke that makes fun of the other side and they're going to laugh at it. It's like a 90s comic being at a convention of people who hate airline food. Like you've got this built-in audience. You say comfortable things. We all agree. Does it really make a difference when that happens?
Yeah. Tina Fey and Seth Meyers famously call this comedy clapter. I think it's pretty prominent in things like the current iteration of The Daily Show, or a host simply says, oh, Mitch McConnell, he's bad. And there's not really a joke. It's just sort of a cheap Mitch McConnell impersonation. So the short answer is no. I don't believe that version of comedy is making a political impact. What I think is happening in the case of right-wing comedy, at least, is it's drawing in especially younger men who may be politically undecided or ambivalent. And it gets them thinking in the political realm, then introduces them to more and more avowedly political ideas of the libertarian ilk or whatever. So that initial encounter might not be a political act, but it gets politically ambivalent, especially younger folks, thinking further and further down the line. And we're saying that right now comedy is serving this function in a right-wing manner.
Nick, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Nick Marks, Associate Professor of Film and Media Studies at Colorado State University. He's co-author of the book, That's Not Funny, How the Right Makes Comedy Work for Them, with us today looking at shifts in political comedy over the years and how that can influence the political landscape as a whole. Still interested in data from you, or a datum from you, as we heard on the Grammar Show this week? Let us know. Do you seek out political comedy? Who do you watch? Who do you avoid? Or do you avoid it as a genre? Email ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org.